Welcome to Damn Good Movie Memories with your host, Brian Davis. This podcast is the cure for your long commute and super boring workday.
Hey there, it's Brian Davis, and for this week's episode, we're going to cover the movie Arsenic and Old Lace from 1944. The studio was Warner Brothers. Release date was September 23rd, 1944. The running time, 118 minutes, and it was in black and white. Leonard Maltin from his classic movie guide gives it 3.5 out of 4 stars. He writes, hilarious adaptation of Joseph Kesselring's hit play about two seemingly harmless old ladies who poison lonely gentlemen callers. Frantic cast is excellent, especially Peter Lorre and Raymond Massey, as unsuspecting murderers holed up in a Brooklyn household. Now, as you guys already know that listen to this podcast, Cary Grant is one of my all-time favorite actors. You would be hard-pressed to find a film that he appeared in that wasn't enjoyable. He truly was the epitome of a movie star. And for this film, it was way, way ahead of its time with a dark comedic nature. I don't remember when I first saw the film, but it was likely on PBS or AMC way back when they used to just show classic films similar to TCM. Ironically, Cary Grant considered his acting in this film to be horribly over the top, and often called it his least favorite of all of his movies. All right, let's get into the making of the film. So this was still fairly early on in Grant's career. He'd been acting since the early 1930s and became a prominent star by the late 1930s. His most notable films prior to Arsenic and Old Lace included Topper, The Awful Truth, My Favorite Wife, both with Irene Dunne, Bringing Up Baby, Holiday and the Philadelphia Story with Katharine Hepburn, Only Angels Have Wings, and The Talk of the Town with Gene Arthur, His Girl Friday with Rosalind Russell, and Suspicion with Joan Fontaine. Now, Bob Hope was the original choice to play the lead role of Mortimer Brewster, but Paramount wouldn't loan him out to Warners for the part. Ronald Reagan and Jack Benny were also offered the role of Mortimer, but they turned it down. Ironically, even though Paramount wouldn't loan out Bob Hope for the film, they didn't mind loaning out Cary Grant for the same film. As for Frank Capra, the director of this film, his films would be beloved by filmgoers of many generations due to his unique ability to make comedies with a heart. Arsenic and Old Lace is sort of an outlier in his career, as it's a dark screwball comedy and never lets up the whole way through. Interestingly enough, Arsenic was Capra's first feature film after directing war documentary films for the United States government during the World War II years. He would continue to direct those documentaries through the end of the war and then returned with It's a Wonderful Life. It's said that after 3 years of being in the service during the war, that making a frivolous film like Arsenic was exactly what Capra needed mentally. Now, Capra's best-known films prior to Arsenic and Old Lace included It Happened One Night with Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert, Mr. Deeds Goes to Town and Meet John Doe, both with Gary Cooper and Gene Arthur, You Can't Take It With You and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, both with James Stewart and Gene Arthur, and Lost Horizon with Ronald Colman. For Priscilla Lane, this would be one of her best-known film roles, and one of her final films as well, as Warner Brothers dropped her from her contract after this film. She would make 2 more films and then left acting to start her family. As Leonard Maltin mentioned in his brief synopsis, the film was an adaptation from the Broadway play, which was very successful and had a 3-year run. Warner Brothers wanted to make the film back in 1942, but instead waited for the stage run cycle to complete before making the film. Both Josephine Hull and Gina Dare, who played the aunt, were in the original play back in 1941, and both signed on to be in the film adaptation and were able to take off 8 weeks from the stage to film their scenes for the movie. Frank Capra was forced to pay $25,000 apiece to the Broadway play's producers for loaning out Adair and Hull for this film. All right, let's get into the film. So after the standard movie opening credits, we get the following message. This is a Halloween tale of Brooklyn, where anything can happen, and it usually does. At 3 p.m. on this particular day, this was happening. We then see fans getting riled up at a Brooklyn Dodgers game after a brawl begins after a player punches an umpire. We then get this message. While at the same time across the river in the United States proper, there was romance in the air. And then we are taken to the local marriage license bureau where Mortimer Brewster, Cary Grant, is getting married to his fiancée Elaine, played by Priscilla Lane.
Here it is.
I knew you'd find it.
Boy, I could sure use a drink.
Ben and Big Shot's getting married today.
Looks like the same suckers get married every day. Come on.
Hey, the guy with the cheaters.
Now, What's he hiding from? Hey, isn't that Mortimer Brewster?
Mortimer Brewster, dramatic critic?
No, it's not him. Oh, what a scoop would it be? The guy who wrote the Bachelor's Bible, finally getting hooked himself. No, it's too good to be true. Come on, let's snap the mayor at his new fire helmet and go home.
Say, let's stick around and see who the guy is.
Two by two, they come and go. Hip, hip, hi-yay. Good morning, children. Your name, please?
Elaine Harper.
Speak a little louder.
Elaine Harper.
Thank you. Yours?
Mortimer Brewster.
How's that?
Mortimer Brewster.
Speak up, Sonny. There's nothing to be afraid of.
Look at him. I want to keep this undercover.
Love her? Why, of course you love her. You're going to marry her, ain't you?
No, no. You don't understand. Come in. Come. You see, I don't want this to get out for a while. I'm Mortimer Brewster.
You're who?
Mortimer Bo- Come on, dear. Don't you understand? How could I marry you? Me, the symbol of bachelorhood. I've sneered at every love scene in every play. I've written 4 million words against marriage. Not only hooked, but to a minister's daughter. And not only a minister's daughter, but a girl from Brooklyn. And look at you. Look at the way you look. What is that infernal contraption you've got there?
Well, that's a pen I borrowed from your aunts. You know what they say, Mortimer. Something borrowed and something...
Yeah, I know that, bromide. Something borrowed, something blue. All new. Rice and old shoes. Carry over the threshold. Niagara Falls. All the city tribe I've made fun of for years. Is this what I've come to? I can't go through with it. I won't marry you, and that's that.
Yes.
What do you mean, yes, Mortimer? Aren't you insulted? Aren't you going to cry? Aren't you going to make a scene?
No, Mortimer.
No. And don't know Mortimer, me either. Look, don't you see, marriage is a superstition. It's old-fashioned. Oh.
Going through with the marriage, we get the last message. And now, back to one of Brooklyn's most charming residential districts. From here, you're on your own. And we see various tombstones in the front yard of Mortimer's two aunts, Abby, played by Josephine Hall, and Martha, Gina Dare, who are beloved in their community and have a room for rent in their large home that has been in the family for many years. Mortimer was raised by his aunts, and he has a brother named Teddy, who believes he is the ex-president Theodore Roosevelt. This includes yelling, "Charge!" as he races up the stairs of his house.
Well, I must be going.
Charge! Charge the blockhouse!
Mortimer arrives with Elaine to his aunt's home to visit and deliver the news of their marriage. Elaine's minister father actually lives across the street from Mortimer's aunts, so they go their separate ways to deliver the news. Keep in mind that Mortimer wrote an anti-marriage book, which he sort of alluded to in the opening clip I played. So convincing Elaine's father is going to be a bit of a challenge. However, Abby and Martha are delighted with the marriage announcement. Mortimer has another brother, Jonathan, who is equally crazy, but not in a nice way like Teddy. We'll get to him later. As you will come to discover, Mortimer is the only sane person in the Brewster family.
Do you remember how he used to cut worms in two with his teeth?
Well, Jonathan? Oh, he's probably in prison or hanged or something by now. I saw a play last week, had a character in it, reminded me of Jonathan.
No, really?
Yeah. Oh, honey of a lunatic. One of those whodunits called Murder Well Out.
Oh, here.
Yeah, what a play. When the curtain goes up, the first thing you see is a dead body. The next thing...
Hey, mister. Happy bridegroom!
Congratulations, darling!
Darling!
No, never mind that now, Aunt Abby. Now listen, darlings. Aunt Abby, Aunt Martha, you know how we've always planned to send Teddy to that sanitarium, Happydale?
Oh, yes, dear. That's after we're gone.
Yes, dear.
Yes, we talked with Reverend Harper about it.
No, no. Teddy's got to go to Happydale now, at once. Now, he's down in the cellar. Get him up here right away.
Well, there's no such hurry as that.
No. When Teddy's working on the canal, you can't get his mind on anything else.
Well, look, darlings. Look, I'm frightfully sorry, but I've got an awful shock for you. Teddy's killed a man, darlings.
Nonsense.
But there's a body in the window seat.
Yes, dear. We know.
You know?
Of course. Yes, but it has nothing to do with Teddy.
But the thing...
Now, Mortimer, you just forget about it. Forget you ever saw the gentleman.
Forget?
We never dreamed you'd peek.
What the... Who is he?
He's Mr. Hoskins. Adam Hoskins. That's really all I know about him, except that he's a Methodist.
Oh, he's a Methodist. Oh, isn't that nice?
That's all you know. Well, what's he doing here? What happened to him?
He died.
Yeah. Look, Aunt Martha, men just don't get into window seats and die.
No, dear. He died first.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Stop all this. Now, look, darling, how did he die?
Oh, Mortimer, don't be so inquisitive. The gentleman died because he drank some wine with poison in it.
Well, how did the poison get in the wine?
Well, we put it in wine because it's less noticeable. When it's in tea, it has a distinct odor.
You mean you put it in the wine?
Yes, and I put Mr. Hoskins in the window seat because Reverend Harper was coming.
Oh. Oh, look at me, darling. You mean you knew what you'd done and you didn't want the Reverend Harper to see the body?
Well, not at tea. That wouldn't have been very nice.
Oh, it's first degree.
Now, Mortimer, you know all about it and just forget about it. Oh. I do think that Martha and I have the right to our own little secrets.
Annie. While I was out, I dropped in on Mrs. Schultz. She's much better, but she would like us to take Junior to the movies again.
Well, we must do that tomorrow or next day.
Yes, but this time we'll go where we want to go. Junior's not going to drag me into another one of those scary pictures.
No, they ought not to be allowed to make such pictures just to frighten people.
Operator, can you hear my voice? You can? You sure? Then I must be here.
So while the ants sound and act like sweet little old women who wouldn't harm a fly, they're actually serial killers who have decided to be the top mercy-killing duo in the United States. They've killed 12 people now, all lonely older men who no longer have the will to live, at least according to them. Mortimer is beside himself that a dead body is casually rotting in the front window seat. The women have sent Teddy downstairs to dig a grave for the body, which is where they bury all of their victims. Now, Teddy believes he's on some sort of mission for the Panama Canal.
Hello? Oh, Judge Coleman? Oh, this is Mortimer Brewster. Look, Judge, I'll tell you why I called you. It's about Teddy. I've got to come over and see you right away. Well, I'm afraid it won't wait until tomorrow, Judge. Yes, you see, it's very, very important. We've got to do something about Teddy immediately. Well, it's practically a matter of life and... Elaine! Well, you get out of here.
Mortimer, what in the world is going on around here? I want to know where I stand.
Oh, anywhere, but don't stand there.
But, darling, Niagara Falls!
It does, well, let it.
Now, wait a minute. Listen, you can't marry me one minute and throw me out of the house the next.
Oh, darling, I'm not throwing you out of the house. I'm not throwing you out of the house. Will you get out of here?
Mortimer!
Oh, I'm sorry, Judge, but a thing happened. Look, Judge, about Teddy, you see...
Mortimer!
You see, Judge, it's this bugle blowing. Yes, the neighbors have been complaining, and the police are all set to throw him into a state institution.
How do you like that?
I read an ad here about a room to rent.
Oh, shut up.
Well, I thought if you could sign the papers and I can get Teddy to commit himself and get him into Happydale. Yes, it's a wonderful place, Judge. You will? Fine, I'll be right over to see you as soon as I made another call.
Doorbell's ringing, dear. Oh, how do you do? Come in.
I understand you've got a room to rent.
Yes, do step in.
Well, are you the lady of the house?
Yes, I'm Miss Brewster.
Hello, operator. Give me long distance, please.
And this is my sister, another Miss Brewster.
My name's Gibbs.
Well, do sit down. I'm sorry, we're just setting the table for dinner. This would be a nice, comfortable chair.
Oh, hello, long distance. I want the Happydale Sanitarium, Happydale, New York.
Is Brooklyn your home?
I haven't got a home. Live in a hotel. Don't like it.
Are your family Brooklyn people?
Hello,
haven't got any family.
What, operator?
All alone in the world.
Yep.
No.
Well, Martha.
No, Happydale. Yes.
Well, you've come to just the right house. Do sit down.
Dale. D like in dig. You know when you dig a lock? That's right. And yeah, A like in arsenic. Got that?
Is there always this much noise?
Oh. He doesn't live with us.
See the headlines, huh? Oh, please. Hello.
I'd really like to see the room. I don't think I'll like it.
The room's upstairs. Won't you try a glass of our wine before we start up?
Never touch it.
Oh, well, we make this ourselves. It's elderberry wine.
Elderberry? I haven't tasted elderberry wine since I was a boy.
Oh!
Thank you.
Operator! Look, I don't want the Happydale laundry. I want the Happydale sanitarium. Sanitarium, sanitarium, sanitarium. Yes, like a broken record.
Have your own elderberry bushes?
No, but the cemetery's full of them.
Oh. Well, score.
Hello, operator. Look, operator, what's taking you so long? It's only across the river. I can swim it faster. Yes. Hello? What? They're busy. Busy? Look, they're busy and you're dizzy. No, I'm not drunk, madam, but you give me an idea.
Mortimer!
Dolly, don't... I'm nervous now. Don't do that.
Mortimer, but... not that. No!
Get out of there. Do you want to be poisoned? Do you want to be murdered? Do you want to be killed? Do you?
They're nuts. You're telling me.
That last scene is great. So while you can only hear Mortimer being hysterical on the phone, the old man who came to rent the room kept putting his drink to his mouth repeatedly, but never actually drank before racing out of the house. While Mortimer is trying to comprehend that his supposed sweet and harmless aunt are serial killers, he's also trying to have Teddy committed, as that can act as an alibi to the murders. In a funny call with the asylum director, it seems there are a number of Theodore Roosevelts already admitted. The doctor was hoping for a Napoleon instead. Mortimer decides to leave his aunt's house for a bit to make arrangements for Teddy. In the meantime, the aunts are getting ready for the service for the latest victim that evening. However, they get two creepy visitors that arrive at the home.
If Mortimer's coming back for the services for Mr. Hoskins, we'll need another hymnal. There's one up in my room. Oh, dear. Happy. We promised Mortimer we wouldn't let anyone come in. Happy, it's two men, and I've never seen them before.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Let me look.
Yes.
Do you recognize them?
No, they're strangers to me. Well... we just have to pretend we're not at home.
Mm-hmm.
This is the home of my youth. As a boy, I couldn't wait to escape from this house. Now I'm glad to escape back into it.
Yes, Johnny, it's a good hideout.
The family must still live here. I hope there's a fatted calf awaiting the return of the prodigal.
Fatted calf? Oh, Johnny, I'm so hungry. Look, Johnny. Drink.
As if we were expected.
Yes.
A good omen.
Who are you? What are you doing here?
Aunt Abby. Aunt Martha. It's Jonathan.
You get out of here.
I'm Jonathan, you know. Your nephew, Jonathan.
Oh, no, you're not. You're nothing like Jonathan, so don't pretend you are. You just get out of here.
I see you're still wearing the lovely garnet ring that Grandma Brewster bought in England. And you, Aunt Martha, still the high collar to hide the scar where Grandfather's acid burned you.
Why, his voice is like Jonathan's. Have you been in an accident?
My face. Dr. Einstein is responsible for that. He's a plastic surgeon.
But I've seen that face before. Abby, do you remember when we took the little Schultz boy to the movies? And I was so frightened. It was that face.
Take it easy, Johnny. Take it easy. Don't worry. The last 5 years, I give him 3 different faces. I give him another one right away. That last face, I saw that picture, too, just before I operated, and I was intoxicated.
See, Doctor, what you've done to me. Even my own family think I...
Johnny, you are home in this lovely house. You know... How many times he tells me about Brooklyn, about this house, and about his aunts he loves so much. They know you, Johnny. Please tell him so.
Well, Jonathan, it's been a long time.
Bless you. It's good to be home again.
Yes, Mortimer's brother, Jonathan, played by Raymond Massey, now has a face that looks like Boris Karloff, filled with surgical scars from his plastic surgeon, Dr. Einstein, played by Peter Lorre. The two men are on the run from the police, as Jonathan has killed a man, along with many others. The aunts don't want Jonathan to stay at their home, and he makes it perfectly clear that he will not leave, and that Dr. Einstein will perform another surgery on his face at their home. Jonathan and Dr. Einstein also want to dispose of their latest victim in the cellar with the other bodies. It's funny talking about this film, as you would think it's like a Universal monster movie, but when it's actually just a dark comedy. While disposing of the body, Elaine shows up at the house, which is pitch black as the lights are off.
Who are you?
I'm Elaine Harper. I live next door.
What are you doing here?
I came here to see my husband, Mortimer.
Why did you say your name was Harper?
Well, it is Harper. I mean, it's Brewster. I'm not very used to it. I'm a brand new Brewster.
Doctor!
It's all right, Johnny. It's okay.
Maybe you'd better explain what you're doing here.
We happen to live here.
You don't live here. I'm in this house every day and I've never seen you before. Where are Miss Martha and Miss Abby? What have you done to them?
Perhaps we'd better introduce ourselves. May I present Dr. Einstein?
Dr. Einstein?
A surgeon of great distinction. And something of a magician.
Now, I suppose you're going to tell me that you're Boris...
I am Jonathan Brewster.
Oh, you're Jonathan.
Oh, you've heard of me.
Yes, they talk about you.
And what do they say about me?
Well, just that there's another brother named Jonathan, that's all they say. That explains everything. Now that I know who you are, I'll just be running along if you'll kindly unlock the door.
That explains everything. Just what do you mean by that? Why do you come here at this time of night?
Well, I just thought I saw Mortimer drive up. I suppose it was you.
You thought you saw someone drive up?
Yes, weren't you just outside? Isn't that your car?
You saw someone at the car?
Yes.
What else did you see?
Oh, just that, that's all.
Is that why you came over here?
Oh, no, I came to see Mortimer, but if he's not home, I'll run along.
Giving two names.
Hurting me.
I think she's dangerous.
No visitors, it's going to be a private funeral.
Teddy lightens the mood, as he always does, but he does nothing to help Elaine, who is being taken by force to the cellar by Jonathan and Dr. Einstein. Mortimer arrives back at the house and is less than enthused to discover that Jonathan has returned home and that there's another body in the window seat. Even the ants have no idea where the additional body came from. And then they get a visit from the local police doing their routine checks of the neighborhood.
Don't reach for the telephone. Remember what happened to Mr. Spinalzo can happen to you, too.
Spinalzo? I knew he was a foreigner.
Oh.
Put down that telephone, Mortimer.
Oh.
Hello.
Oh, officer, oh, hello.
I saw your lights out. I thought you might have sickness now.
No.
Well, you got company? Oh, I'm sorry I disturbed you.
Go, come in.
Yes, do come in. Now, right in, Officer O'Hara. This is our nephew, Mortimer.
Well, pleased to meet you.
Glad to see you, fella.
And this is another nephew, Jonathan.
Pleased to make your acquaintance. Say, your face is familiar. Haven't I seen a picture of you somewhere before?
I don't think so.
I'll be running along.
Oh, go on. What's the hurry? Why didn't you stick around until my brother leaves?
Well, I got to ring in, Mr. Brewster. Say, you're not the Mortimer Brewster, the book writer and the dramatic critic, are you?
Well, yes, why?
Oh, what a break for me. I'm a playwright.
No.
I'm working on a play now.
You are?
Yeah.
Well, well, well. Maybe I can help you with it.
Oh, would you? Oh, what a break. I get wonderful ideas, but I can't spell them.
You can't? Oh, I can spell like the diggers, all the big Constantinople, all the things. Well, come on, let's go into the kitchen.
All right.
Tell me all about it.
Yeah.
Couldn't you whip up a sandwich for Officer O'Hara?
I hope you don't mind eating in the kitchen, Officer O'Hara.
And where else would you eat?
See you in a moment.
Now, listen, Jonathan, this is your last chance. I'll keep O'Hara busy in the kitchen and give you a chance to get out. All three of you. You, Dr. Einstein, and Spinalzo.
Mortimer,
because if you don't leave here in 5 minutes, I'll bring in Officer O'Hara and introduce him to Mr. Spinalzo.
Mr. Brewster, my place. Right with you, O'Hara. Right with you.
All right,
Spinalzo, play. Now get going, all three of you.
The amateur playwright police officer is played by the great character actor Jack Carson. Jonathan refuses to leave the house no matter what Mortimer says.
Look, I thought I told you. Oh. Jonathan! Jonathan! Jonathan!
Yes, Mortimer.
What are you two doing still here? I thought I told you to beat it.
We're not going.
You're not going?
No.
No?
You stay out of this. All right, you asked for it. Officer O'Hara?
Coming.
Now.
If you tell O'Hara what's in the window seat, I'll tell him what's down in the cellar.
Cellar?
There's an elderly gentleman down there who seems to be very dead.
What were you doing down the cellar?
Well, what is he doing in the cellar?
Now what are you going to tell O'Hara?
See, your eyes think my opening is swell. They want to hear the rest of it. Should I bring him in here?
No, you can't do that. You can't do that now. You better ring in.
Oh, the heck with ringing in. You got to be rolling now. I want to tell you the whole plot.
Yeah, well, you can't tell me in front of those two fellows. They wouldn't appreciate it.
Huh? Oh, lowbrows, huh?
Yeah, let's go someplace where we can be alone. I'll meet you there later, see?
Okay. Yeah. Say, how about the back room at Kelly's?
Kelly's?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, fine place. Bohemian answer. Genius at work. That's the place. Now, you ring in, I'll meet you in Kelly's.
All right, fine.
Why don't you both go down in the cellar?
Well, that's all right with me.
No. There's a much more literary atmosphere in Kelly's, I assure you. Yeah.
Okay.
Gloomy in the cellar.
This opening will kill you.
It will.
I'm waiting to be born, see? And the doctor comes in and starts...
Oh, the doctor?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, now, look. You ring in. I'll see you later.
Okay. Now, you won't stand me up, will you, Mr. Brewster?
Yeah, no.
This is a great play. You'll like it, I'm sure. I'll see you down there.
I can't wait.
Doctor? Where are those papers? Oh, there they are. Oh, you're smug, aren't you? You think you got it over me? Well, you haven't. You think I'm afraid to go to the police about Spinalzo because you'll blab about Hoskins? Well, I'm not. The moment I get Spinalzo... the moment the doctor signs this, I don't care who knows about him. Hoskins, I mean. And you better feel the same way about Spinalzo. Yes, Spinalzo. You better...
Where are you going?
The doctor's. Where do you think... Oh! When I come back, I expect to find you gone. Wait for me.
I think we could start the services now. Oh, we thought we heard you leave.
Perish the thought, dear aunties. That was just Mortimer.
And speaking of services, Aunt Martha, will you make us some coffee while we take Mr. Spinalzo down to the cellar?
Oh, no. No, Jonathan, you've got to take him with you.
There's a friend of Mortimer's downstairs waiting for him.
A friend of Mortimer's?
Take his feet, Doctor. Mr. Spinalzo and he will get along fine together. They're both dead.
Oh, he must mean Mr. Hoskins.
Mr. Hoskins?
You know about what's down there?
Of course we do. And he's no friend of Mortimer's. He's one of our gentlemen.
Your gentleman?
Yes. And we won't have any strangers buried in our cellar.
But Mr. Hoskins...
Mr. Hoskins is no stranger. Besides, there's no room for Mr. Spinalzo. The cellar's crowded already.
Crowded with what?
There are 12 graves down there now. That leaves very little room, and we're going to need it.
You mean that you and Aunt Martha have murdered...
Murdered? Well, certainly not. It's one of our charities. Why, what we've been doing is a mercy. So you just take your Mr. Spinalzo out of here.
You've done all that right here in this house and buried them in the cellar.
That's wonderful, Johnny.
We've been chased all over the world. They stay right here in Brooklyn, and they do just as good as you do.
What?
Yeah. You got 12, they got 12.
I've got 13.
No, Johnny, 12. Don't brag.
13. There's Mr. Spinalzo. And the first one in London, two in Johannesburg, one in Sydney, one in Melbourne, two in San Francisco, one in Phoenix, Arizona.
Phoenix?
The filling station.
Filling? Oh, yes.
Three in Chicago and one in South Bend. That makes 13.
You cannot count the one in South Bend. He died of pneumonia.
He wouldn't have died of pneumonia if I hadn't shot him.
No, no, Johnny, you cannot count him. You got 12, they got 12. The old ladies is just as good as you are.
They are they? Well, that's easily taken care of. All I need is one more. That's all, just one more. And I've a pretty good idea who it is.
Of course, that would be Mortimer as potential victim for Jonathan. Okay, there's about 40 minutes left and plenty of fast-paced craziness to come. How will it all play out? Well, you just have to do yourself a favor and watch the film. It's truly a delight, and even though it's 2 hours long, it's really a fast-paced film. The characters are terrific, and pretty much anything with Cary Grant in it is going to be a winner, so check it out. Also, there's a great twist at the very end of this film that is hilarious. All right, there are a ton of fun facts. So Amy Archer Gilligan, who was America's most prolific female serial killer, had been cited as the inspiration for this story. She was charged with the poisoning deaths of her two husbands and was allegedly responsible for the deaths of 66 other elderly inmates of her nursing home. Her weapon of choice? Well, it was arsenic, of course. Some 20 years before this movie, Jean Adair had helped nurse a very ill vaudeville performer named Archie Leach back to health. When she was asked to reprise her Broadway arsenic and old lace role as Aunt Martha for the film, Adair and Leach, now known as Cary Grant, were old friends. The Production Code Administration asked the filmmakers to tone down the sex frustration of the newlyweds Elaine and Mortimer. While the eagerness of the newlyweds is apparent in the final cut of the film, the filmmakers complied with the PCA and minimized the couple's quote-unquote frustration in several scenes. Frank Capra noted that while he was stationed in London in January of 1943, he overheard American and British soldiers screaming, "Charge!" and in the manner of the Teddy Roosevelt character, and deduced that they had seen the film. He then learned that Jack Warner had released the picture to the armed forces that month, a year after it was completed, and almost 2 years before it was released to the general public. Frank Capra preferred Andy Devine for the role of the delusional Teddy Roosevelt, but that role eventually went to John Alexander, who of course received rave critical reviews for his performance. Frank Capra actually related to the role of Mortimer in the film because, like that character, he also had an older brother who abused him as a child and grew up to be a criminal. Alright, I do have an old-time radio adaptation which is really cool. It's from the Screed Guild Theater from November 25th, 1946, and it stars Boris Karloff and Eddie Albert. Now, this makes sense about Karloff, because he played Jonathan on stage, and even the film makes reference to Raymond Massey looking like Boris Karloff. Karloff wanted to be cast as Jonathan in the film, but unlike Hull and Adair, he was not let out of his stage contract to make the film, which he always resented. But at least he did the radio version, and I'm going to play that to you now. And then I'll be back next week to talk about yet another random movie from my DVD collection.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, Lady Esther has the pleasure of bringing you one of the famous hits of our generation, Joseph Kesselring's Arsenic and Old Lace, originally produced on Broadway by Russell Krauss and Howard Lindsay. It stars Boris Karloff from the original cast and one of Hollywood's most popular young actors, Eddie Albert. And here they are, appearing with the Lady Esther Screen Guild players in Arsenic and Old Lace. You could ask anybody in that section of Brooklyn, and they all would tell you the very same thing. The neighbors, the minister, Dr. Harper, even O'Hara, the cop on the beat.
You mean them two old Brewster sisters? Why, there ain't two sweeter little ladies in the world. Too bad, though, about that nephew of theirs. Too bad, he's sort of...
Charge! Charge! Follow me, men! Up San Juan Hill after Teddy Roosevelt!
See what I mean?
But the Brewster sisters have another nephew, Mortimer. He's dramatic critic on a New York paper. And he's always considered himself quite sane until tonight.
Aunt Abby, Aunt Martha, I have news for you. I'm going to marry Elaine Harper.
Oh, Mortimer, how nice. Our minister's daughter.
Really, Mortimer, we ought to celebrate.
Not tonight, darlings. I've got to pick up Elaine and get back to town. Have to cover a play tonight.
Well, I do hope it's something you like for once. What's the name of it, dear?
Murder Will Out. I'll bet I can write the review without even seeing it.
I always said you were talented, dear.
Same old tripe. When the curtain goes up, first thing you see is a dead body. Well, maybe you won't actually see it. It'll be hidden somewhere, like in this window seat. Then someone will come on, walk in sort of casually, lift the cover up of the window seat like this. And...
Why, Mortimer, dear, what's the matter?
Aunt Abby, Aunt Martha, there's a dead man in there. Now, look, aunties, let me say it again slowly. There's a body in the window seat.
Yes, dear, we know.
You know?
Well, of course.
Oh, honestly, I never thought Teddy would ever get... Listen, you were planning to send him to that sanitarium, Happydale?
Yes, dear, it's all arranged. Elaine's father brought the papers over this afternoon. Here they are, all ready for Teddy to sign.
Well, he's got to sign them right away. Tonight! If they ever found out he's killed a man, they'll...
Oh, Teddy didn't do that.
He didn't?
Now, Mortimer, just forget about it. Forget you even saw the gentleman.
Forget?
We never dreamed you'd peek.
But who is he?
His name is Hoskins. Adam Hoskins. That's all I really know about him. Except that he's a Methodist.
Yes, but... What's he doing here? What happened to him?
He died.
Aunt Martha... Men don't just get into window seats and die.
No, Mortimer. He died first.
Well, how?
Oh, Mortimer, don't be so inquisitive. The gentleman died because he drank some wine with poison in it. Elderberry wine.
How did the poison get in the wine?
Oh, we put it in the wine because it's less noticeable. When it's in tea, it has a distinct odor.
You put it in the wine?
Yes, and we put Mr. Hoskins in the window seat because Elaine's father was coming to tea.
Then you knew what you'd done. You didn't want Dr. Harper to see the body.
Well, not at tea. That wouldn't have been very nice. Now, Mortimer, dear, you can forget all about it. Teddy's down in Panama right now.
Panama?
You know, the cellar. He always calls the cellar Panama. And the steps over there are San Juan Hill. He's down in Panama now, digging the lock.
You mean you're going to bury Mr. Hoskins in the cellar?
Of course, dear. That's what we did with the others.
Well, I don't think you should... Others?
The other gentleman.
Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. When you say
Others? Do you mean others? More than one? Others?
Oh. Yes, this is 11, isn't it, Abby?
No, dear, this makes 12.
Well, you really shouldn't count the first one. After all, he just died.
Just died?
Well, Martha means without any help from us. Mr. Midgley was his name. He was a Baptist. And he came here looking for a room.
It was right after you moved to New York, Mortimer.
It didn't seem right to leave that lovely room empty with so many people needing it. So we advertised and Mr. Midgley applied.
He was so lonely. No kith or kin. We felt so sorry for him. And then when his heart attack came and he sat there dead in that chair. Remember, Martha? It was just like old times.
Yes.
Grandfather was a doctor, you know. He always had a cadaver or two around the house.
Only Teddy insisted that Mr. Midgley was a yellow fever victim and had to be buried at once. So we buried him in Panama.
Yes. He looked so peaceful, didn't he, Abby?
Oh, so serene. And we made up our minds right then and there that if we could help other lonely old men find the same peace, we would.
So that's how it all started, that man walking in and dropping dead.
Oh, but of course we realized we couldn't depend on that always happening.
Mortimer, you know those jars of poison that have been up in Grandfather's laboratory all these years?
And your Aunt Martha has such a knack for mixing things.
Well, dear, for a gallon of elderberry wine, I take one teaspoonful of arsenic and then add half a teaspoonful of strychnine and then just a pinch of cyanide.
Should have quite a kick.
Oh, yes, yes. As a matter of fact, one of our gentlemen found time to say, how delicious.
Look, Aunties, I don't know how to explain it to you, but you can't do things like this. It's against the law. It's not a nice thing to do. I mean, well, this has developed into a very bad habit.
Mortimer, we don't stop you from doing things you like to do. Why should you interfere with us?
Because you... Listen, I've got to rush into town and cover that play. Do a lot of things. There's not a minute to spare.
Are you sure you haven't time for dinner? I'm going to try a new recipe.
Thanks. I couldn't eat a thing.
This is it, Doctor. Yes, I remember this door. Even when I was a child, it always sounded like inner sanctum. Come in.
Oh, Johnny, it is dark in here.
That means the family still live here. The Brewsters were always sparing with lights.
Is that so?
Hey, who turns on the lights?
I did. Who are you?
Yes, what are you gentlemen doing here?
Why, Aunt Abby, Aunt Martha, it's Jonathan.
You get out of here.
But I'm Jonathan, your nephew Jonathan.
Oh, no, you're not. You're nothing like Jonathan, so don't pretend you are.
But I am. I'm Jonathan. And this is Dr. Einstein.
Abby, his voice does sound like Jonathan's.
But his face... Have you been in an accident?
No. My face... Dr. Einstein is responsible for that. He changes people's faces. I ought to...
Now, easy, Johnny, easy. Don't worry, ladies. The last 5 years, I give Johnny 3 new faces. I give him another one right away.
You'd better, when my own family doesn't even...
Oh, Johnny, I'm sorry. I saw that horror picture just before I operated, and I was a little drunk. But anyway, now you are home... Ladies, how often he tells me about Brooklyn, about his house, about his aunts that he loves so much. Oh, please, you must know him. Speak to him. Tell him so.
Well, Jonathan, it's been a long time since you ran away from us.
Yes, where have you been all these years?
Oh, England, South Africa, Australia, the last 5 years. Dr. Einstein and I have been in Chicago.
Really? We were in Chicago for the World's Fair.
We didn't like it. We found Chicago awfully warm.
Yeah, it got too hot for us, too.
Well, Jonathan, it was nice to see you again. I mean, if you're in a hurry to get somewhere.
Not at all, Aunt Abby.
But, Martha, dear, Martha, we mustn't let soup
boil over. Jonathan, if you'll excuse us for a minute.
Of course.
Come along, Martha.
Johnny, we have got to work fast. The police have got pictures of your face. I got to find a place to operate. And we've got to find a place for Mr. Spinalzo, too.
Don't waste any worry on that rat.
But we can't leave a dead body in the rumble seat. Oh, you shouldn't have killed him, Johnny. He was a nice fellow. He gives us a lift, and what happens?
He said I looked like Boris Karloff.
Don't worry, Johnny. As soon as I operate and change your face again...
Wait a minute. I know just the place.
You do?
Look, if this family hasn't changed, and I'm sure it hasn't, I'll bet my grandfather's old laboratory is just the way he left.
Oh, good.
And when you've done with me, why, we can make a fortune here.
In Brooklyn?
Of course. Practically everybody in Brooklyn needs a new face.
But, Johnny, your aunts, I don't think they want us here.
Leave that to me, Doctor. I'll handle it. Why, this house will be our headquarters for years.
Oh, that would be beautiful, Johnny. This nice, quiet house, those sweet old ladies. I love them already. I get the bags, yeah?
Doctor, we must wait till we're invited.
But you just said...
We'll be invited.
And if they say no?
Doctor, two helpless old women. Sit down and make yourself comfortable.
It's like comes true a beautiful dream. It's so nice and peaceful here.
That's what makes this house so perfect for us. It's so peaceful.
Samuel Hillman, charge! Charge!
I must say, my dear aunts, it was very kind of you to invite the doctor and myself to dinner.
We didn't really invite you, Jonathan. You invited yourself.
Well, it just shows you I feel at home already. I'm sure I'm going to like it here.
Like it here? You mean you're going to stay?
Oh, hadn't I told you?
Now, Jonathan, you needn't think you're going to stay.
Abby, the dinner dishes. Shouldn't we get started on them, dear?
Huh? Yes, of course. Jonathan, we'll speak to you later.
Johnny, just now that Teddy takes me down the cellar, and what do you think I find?
What?
The Panama Canal.
The Panama Canal.
Listen. He digs a hole down there, just the right size for Mr. Spinalzo.
Say, that's an idea. What a joke on my aunts to bury a body in their cellar.
But how are we going to get him in?
Get him in through those French windows. We can hide him in the window seat.
The window seat?
It's perfect for a corpse. Why, when I was a youngster, I used to hide there myself. Then, a little later on, when my aunts have gone to bed, we'll take him down and bury him.
But suppose they come in here and find us?
My dear doctor, you don't understand. My aunts are doing the dinner dishes. They'll be in the kitchen for quite some time.
Oh, they will?
Yes, they've always kept a very neat home. Shall we go?
But, Abby, are you sure they've gone out?
Yes. They're out there at their car. Besides, we've got to get Mr. Hoskins out of this window seat.
Yes, poor dear. He can't be very comfortable.
And when Mortimer gets back, he'll take care of Jonathan.
There'll be an awful row. They've never liked each other.
Martha, I will not invite Jonathan to Mr. Hoskins' services.
Abby, dear, we better hurry.
Yes, let's see if Teddy is still in the cellar.
Teddy, are you down there in Panama?
Who dares call the president by his first name?
Mr. President, we've got another gentleman.
Is he dead?
A yellow fever victim. Teddy, I'm afraid you'll have to hurry.
That's it, Doctor. That's fine. See how nicely he fits?
Just like this window seat was made to order.
Now we'll go upstairs. When my aunts have gone to sleep, we'll come down and put him away. And after that...
I know, Johnny, I know. I operate.
Well, everything seems quiet enough. They must be sleeping, I guess. Might as well have a little light down here. And that's better. Now, let me see. First, I've got to get Hoskins out of the window seat. It's Not very pleasant, but it's got to be done. Come on, old man. I'm sorry to disturb you.
Ooh, another one!
Mortimer!
Darling, you're back. Just in time for the services.
Aunt Abby, Aunt Martha, there's another body in the window seat. Look!
Now, who can that be?
Why, it's a stranger.
My goodness, how did he get in there?
Now, wait a minute, you two. You can't get out of this. That's another one of your gentlemen.
Mortimer, how can you say such a thing? That man's an imposter.
But you admitted... you admitted you put Mr. Hoskins in the window seat.
Well, yes, I did, but I...
Well, this man couldn't have just got the idea from Mr. Hoskins. By the way, where is Mr. Hoskins?
Teddy took him down to Panama.
Yes, he's down there waiting for the services. Abby, dear, we've always wanted to hold a double funeral.
No, Martha. I will not read services over a total stranger.
Stranger? Aunt Abby, there are 12 men buried down there in the cellar. You admit you poisoned them. Now you try to tell me this one is a stranger?
Well, of course. Darling, you don't think I'd stoop to telling a fib? No!
Second act of the Lady Esther Screen Guild play will follow in a moment. Now, a word from Lady Esther.
When was the last time you really saw another woman give your skin one of those admiring looks? A little envious, because it was so fresh and clear and young-looking. When your skin does not have that clear, fresh, young look, skin specialists tell me it's usually because of an oily, stubborn film, which clouds the skin, makes it look tired and older. The thing to do is just this. Smooth on Lady Esther four-purpose face cream and then wipe it off. Then, the important part, at least once a day, repeat this treatment immediately. Again, smooth on Lady Esther four-purpose face cream and again wipe it off. The first time, remove surface makeup and dirt. But it's the important second time which gets after that clinging, clouding, oily film. And immediately, your skin looks cleaner, fresher, clearer, and far younger than you can possibly expect. Yes, immediately you will see and feel a big difference. Because each time you use it, Lady Esther four-purpose face cream does the four things your skin needs most for beauty. And it's so gentle and soft, you don't have to massage and rub at your skin. My cream itself does the work, not your fingers. And it needs no help from any other cream. Try this with Lady Esther four-purpose face cream. Sure as you do, someone will say to you, "Why, I've never seen you look so rested, so fresh and young. You know, you look like a young girl in love."
And now Lady Esther presents the second act of Arsenic and Old Lace, starring Eddie Albert and Boris Karloff, with Verna Felton and Jane Morgan. Well, Mortimer thinks he's going crazy until his brother Jonathan walks in. That makes the answer fairly apparent, and Mortimer shifts right into high. He tells him he's going to call the police and show them the very dead Mr. Spethalzel. And it looks like his bluff is going to work when Dr. Einstein comes rushing in.
Johnny! Johnny!
Come along, Doctor. It seems that we are leaving.
No, Johnny, wait. Just now that Teddy takes me down to Panama again, and guess what?
What?
Johnny, we stay. We got an ace in the hole.
Now, Jonathan discovers poor dead Mr. Hoskins, and that changes things all around again, especially since Mortimer has to leave to finish some very urgent business. And now, while they're awaiting Mortimer's return, the two old ladies are quite upset.
Jonathan, will you please tell us what you plan doing with your Mr. Spinalzo?
Going to bury him with your Mr. Hoskins, I suppose.
Oh, no, you won't. We won't have any strangers buried in our cellar.
And besides, the cellar's crowded already.
Yes. There are 12 graves down there right now.
12 graves?
But you can see that leaves us very little room, and we're going to need it.
You mean you two ladies have murdered all those?
Murdered? Certainly not.
It's one of our charities.
Why, what we've been doing is a mercy.
You've done that here in this house, and you've buried them down there?
Johnny, we have been chasing all over the world. They stay right here at home and do just as good as you do.
What?
You got 12? They got 12.
I've got 13.
No, Johnny, 12.
13.
No, Johnny, you can't count the one in South Bend. He died of pneumonia.
He wouldn't have got pneumonia if I hadn't shot him.
No, Johnny, he don't count. He don't count. You got 12 and they got 12. The old ladies are just as good as you are.
Oh, they are they? Well, that's easily taken care of. All I need is one more, that's all. Just one more.
Well, here I am.
Oh, please, young man, take my advice. Go away from this house. Go away now while Johnny is still busy in the cellar with Mr. Spinalzo.
I'm sorry, Doctor. I'm expecting someone. Someone very important. Besides, I've still got to write my review.
But I tell you, Johnny is in a bad mood, and when he's like this, he is a madman.
Don't worry, I'll take care of Jonathan, too.
Ach, Himmel, don't you got no sense? Don't you learn nothing from those plays, you see?
Are you kidding? You think people in plays act intelligently? You should have seen the one I had to cover tonight. There's a fellow in this play, knows he's in a house with murderers. He's even been warned. But does he get out? No, he stays there. Now, I ask you, Doctor, is that intelligent?
You are asking me.
He didn't even have sense enough to be on guard. For instance, the murderer invites him to sit down.
Oh, you mean, won't you sit down?
Believe it or not, that was in there, too. So what happens? He sits down, just like this. What do you think they tie him with?
What?
The curtain cord.
That's very convenient.
A little too convenient. When are these playwrights going to use some imagination? So he sits there, the big dope. This fellow who's supposed to be bright, he sits there just like I'm sitting here, letting murder walk up behind him, just waiting to be trussed up and gagged.
You're quite right, my dear brother. That fellow wasn't very smart. Well, he seems to be gagged and tied quite well. All right, Doctor. We go to work.
Please, Johnny, first I need a drink. Oh, there's some wine here.
Oh, yes, the elderberry wine, by all means.
I pour you one, too. Oh, how I need this.
Please, Doctor, your manners. Not without a toast. To my dear dead
Judge
brother.
Charge! Charge!
Ach, Himmel!
That idiot. He goes next. You hear me? He's next.
No. Oh, no, Johnny, not Teddy.
We'll get to him later. Come on, we've got to work fast.
Hey, what is this?
It's the cops.
Listen, that Teddy's got to quit blowing his horn. We promised the neighbors.
All right, officer, we'll speak to him.
I better talk to him myself. Where's the lights? That's better. I'll go up to his room and Hey, ain't that Mr. Mortimer?
Yes, it is.
What's he doing tied up like that?
Well, he was explaining the play he saw tonight. That's what happened to the fellow in the play.
No kidding? Well, I wouldn't want to interfere.
Hey, O'Hara!
Oh, hiya, Brophy. How's the prowl car business?
Car kind of warm. Lieutenant Steven.
Did he get you on the radio?
Yeah, he says he got so many complaints from the neighbors, you'd think they dropped an atom bomb on Flatbush Avenue. He says we got to take Teddy and they... Hey, what's that guy trussed up like that?
Oh, that's Mr. Mortimer. He's playing.
Well, get him untied. He looks like he's choking.
Oh, sure. Won't take me but a second.
Officer, perhaps you better let me...
Hey, who is this guy?
That's my brother. And you'd better stick around because he...
Don't listen to him, officer. He's dangerous.
Huh?
That's why we had to tie him up. He's the lowest kind of person in the whole world.
A dramatic critic?
And my two aunts. Huh. You think they're sweet, charming old ladies, do you? Well, there are 13 bodies buried in their cellar.
Listen, you be careful what you say about your aunts. They happen to be friends of ours. Hey, Brophy, can you imagine with a puss like his? Why, he looks just like Boris Karloff.
Why, are you?
Hey, wait a minute. Lay off. Hey, Brophy, help me.
Let go, Brophy. You. What's the idea? You hear me? I said let go.
Oh, there. Gotta take care of him for a while.
What was biting him? Choking me like that?
I don't know. When you said he looked like it... Hey, wait a minute. This guy is wanted.
You sure?
Sure. Don't you ever read Truth Detective? He escaped from an asylum. Why, that's the way he was described. He looked like Karloff.
Is there a reward?
Yeah. Help me lug him out to the car.
But how about the bodies in the cellar?
Bodies in the cellar? Ain't that enough to show you he's nuts?
Hey, what about the other one? You know who I mean, Mr. Mortimer.
The doctor.
Yeah, he must have walked out.
Don't worry, we'll pick him up. Come on.
Mr. Mortimer, you'll excuse us, huh? I mean, seeing as hot as a reward.
Yeah, I understand.
But you will take care of Teddy, though.
Absolutely. Tonight. Aunt Martha, Aunt Abby, I know it's very late, but you see, Mr. Witherspoon came all the way over here. He's the superintendent of Happydale, you know.
He is? How nice.
Yes, and all the papers have been signed, and he's going to take Teddy with him tonight.
Really, Mr. Witherspoon?
Well, that was my understanding.
Mortimer, does Teddy know?
Not exactly. He thinks he's going on a safari to Africa.
Abby, dear, we'll miss Teddy, won't we? We love him so.
Oh, I've fixed all that too, Aunt Martha. You and Aunt Abby are going along just so you can be close to Teddy.
Why, Mortimer, how thoughtful of you. Yes, isn't that nice? And, Mortimer, you can have the house.
The house?
Of course, you'll need it if you're going to marry Elaine.
Elaine? Holy Toledo, she must still be waiting. Excuse me, I've got to go and call her.
He's such a good boy, Mr. Witherspoon.
Yes, I'm sure.
You know, since we're all going away together, I think we ought to celebrate, have a party.
I'm sorry, but I'm here in an official capacity.
Oh, that's too bad. Tell me, does your family live at Happydale, too?
I'm afraid I haven't any family.
You're all alone. Oh, isn't that too bad? You know, Martha, if Mr. Witherspoon won't let us give him a party, at least we might offer him a glass of wine. Of course, the elderberry wine.
Elderberry wine?
We make it ourselves.
Well, of course, at Happydale, our relationship will be much more formal. But here...
Oh, we're very informal. Yes. Go ahead, Martha. Pour him a glass.
On behalf of the Motion Picture Relief Fund, thank you, Boris Karloff, Eddie Albert, Jane.
If you enjoy this podcast and are an iTunes user, please do the show a favor and head on over to the official iTunes page for Damn Good Movie Memories. Be sure to leave a rating and a review. This will allow the show to appear higher in the algorithm and spread the joy of this podcast to the masses. If you are not an iTunes user, you can still listen and subscribe on Podbean at damngoodmoviememories.podbean.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook under our Damn Good Movie Memories page. You can also listen to a limited number of episodes on YouTube. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and be sure to tune in next week for an all-new episode of Damn Good Movie Memories.